Election Day has arrived. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. The campaign ads are done. No more commercials, no more online ads, no more flyers. Voters go to the polls and they decide. We're going to get an update from numerous campaigns, also a look around South Florida, and we want to hear from you today. Also on the program, women still face more challenges than men climbing the corporate ladder. And in South Florida, one of the hottest places for entrepreneurs, we want to look at what role women are playing in making this market a powerhouse. One of those women is Alexa Carlin. She runs the Women's Empower Expo. Finally, we're going to hear from Miami native and author Kelly Link. She writes science fiction and fantasy, and she's the recent recipient of the MacArthur Genius Fellowship. So what are her plans for that $600,000 prize?
Well, I will say that no strings attached is such a wonderful thing to hear.
All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. After months of campaigning, all the mailers and the endless television and online ads, it all comes to an end today. Voters head to the polls, and tonight we'll have a new governor. Voters will also decide Congress's fate. Will it remain in the hands of the GOP, or will Democrats retake either of the chambers? Voters will also decide on more than a dozen constitutional amendments and numerous other local issues. Among the highest-profile races on the ticket this year, of course, is the governor's race. Republican nominee Ron DeSantis voted with his family in Ponte Vedra Beach near Jacksonville this morning.
Vote, vote, vote. Just get out and vote. Make your voice heard. I mean, if you want to protect Florida's future, this is your chance to do it. I'll build off the success. I'll be able to get a lot of things done. And I think that we'll be more successful than ever.
And Democratic nominee and Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum voted with his family in the state capitol this morning.
Good morning, everybody. I'm extremely excited to cast a vote for myself. I tried to look over and see what she was doing, but my wife also voted for me.
Well, we want to hear from you. Did you vote for the first time ever? Did you decide not to vote? Why not? Did you have any trouble while you were at a polling place this morning, or maybe you're there now? Well, let us know your thoughts. Share your stories. Give us a call, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. And, of course, again, if you're out there voting today, if you've seen any, you know, maybe long lines or some challenging, you know, situations at some of the poll sites that you've been to, or maybe it's been smooth sailing, well, then great. We want to hear from you. You can also find us on Twitter or Facebook at WLRN Sundial. Let us know what the day and this campaign season has been like for you. We're going to hear from a number of reporters who've been out there in the field at different polling locations and following some of the candidates. First, we're going to go to Tallahassee, where the Andrew Gillum campaign will be for tonight's vote. And we're joined by WLRN education reporter Jessica Bakeman. Jessica, welcome.
Thanks, Lewis.
All right. So the Gillum campaign back in the state capitol. What have you heard from them about these last few weeks and what it's been like for them?
Well, as you heard, Andrew Gillum voted with his family this morning at a Catholic church in Tallahassee. And one of the things he said about the last few days is that he has been in the panhandle, which of course is an area that was hit really hard by Hurricane Michael. It's also an area that tends to be pretty red. And he said that he wanted to go out there and talk to the people, even though a lot of them are not likely to support him, because he said it's important for everyone in Florida to know that he wants to be everyone's governor, even those people who aren't going to vote for him. But he is back in Tallahassee today. He, of course, is the mayor of Tallahassee. So this is his home. And last night he was at Florida A&M University, which is his alma mater. It's the state's only public historically black college, and there was a big concert rally, and he'll be back on campus at FAMU tonight for his election night watch party.
What sort of national media presence is there in Tallahassee, just in case if Mr. Gillum does pull off the victory?
Oh, there are a lot of reporters here, Lewis. When I was covering him voting this morning, there were dozens of reporters. Same last night at the event, the concert and rally at FAMU, and I'm sure there will be tonight as well. This is definitely one of those races that's being watched nationally, especially given that you have candidates who are so far opposite of each other in a way that mirrors the kind of divisions that we're seeing politically around the country.
And where will Gillum and his campaign be tonight?
They will be at Florida A&M University, which is in Tallahassee. I'm told that it's an outdoor event, so I'm trying to prepare for that. The directions to press say to wear layers, because in Tallahassee, it's hot, it's humid, it's raining, it's not raining. So it's going to be an interesting night.
And it's not just obviously the Gillum campaign and the media, but some other folks are in Tallahassee as well. You did a report recently on Emma Gonzalez, one of the Parkland students and founders of the March for Our Lives, trying to get the young vote out. Tell us a little bit more about her visit to Tallahassee.
Yeah, so it was Emma Gonzalez and also some of the other students who survived the Parkland shooting who've been among the best known. David Hogg was there, Jacqueline Corin, Delaney Tarr, Sophie Whitney are some of those students. And they, of course, founded the March for Our Lives and have been, for the last several months, just going around the country trying to encourage young people to vote. And they made one of their last stops yesterday. They went to the state capitol in Tallahassee, and they sort of had one more pitch to voters, especially young people, to get out and vote, and specifically to vote for candidates who support gun control, because, of course, that's, you know, their campaign. They want to see things like universal background checks and red flag laws that would allow, you know, guns to be taken away from people who are considered to be dangerous to themselves or others. So they were advocating for that. And, you know, at FAMU last night and tonight again, there are tons of students and community members. I mean, obviously, given that Andrew Gillum is the mayor of Tallahassee, he has a lot of support here locally.
And real quickly, what's the mood like in Tallahassee? I mean, we've heard about, you know, a lot more people have early voted or voted by mail, that there was going to be a lot more people voting than in the 2014 midterm. But what have you seen and what have you heard?
I think there's a lot of enthusiasm here. Again, given that he's mayor, you know, people sort of see him as their son, their person, you know, that is fighting for them. And when I was at the concert last night, you know, it was this space on campus at FAMU that's usually used for like graduation. So it was like a stadium seating kind of situation. It was totally packed with students. There were thousands of students waiting outside to get in, and the different performing artists, there were like DJ Khaled and P. Diddy and some others, they were there. And in between songs, they were saying, "Let's bring it home for Andrew Gillum." And everyone in the audience was cheering. And, you know, this morning there was a small crowd of supporters at the location where Andrew Gillum voted. He seemed really calm and happy and excited and confident. So we'll see if that mood continues tonight. I'm certainly, from what I experienced at FAMU last night, thinking ahead to what tonight is going to be like, I think it's either going to be a massive party celebration if he wins, or it's going to be like a massive mourning, you know, with a lot of people really, really devastated if he loses. So we will see later. We'll talk to you later.
All right, Jessica, thanks so much.
Thanks, Lewis.
And again, that's WLRN education reporter Jessica Bankman joining us from Tallahassee, following the Andrew Gillum campaign. Now, before we go over to Orlando to hear more about the Ron DeSantis campaign, remember, we want to hear from you. I want to hear your thoughts about your experience today voting. Give us a call, 800-743-9576. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. And again, just tell us about your thoughts. And maybe this is the first, especially if this is the first time you've ever voted, we'd love to hear from you and what that experience was like and why you wanted to vote this time around. I'm told that we do have Brendan Byrne now. I want to go over to Brendan Byrne, reporter for our sister station, WMFE in Orlando, again, following the Ron DeSantis campaign. Brendan, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So tell us what the DeSantis campaign has said about these last few weeks of their campaign trail.
Well, it seems to be they've been running on the I'm Not Andrew Gillum campaign, and that is pretty much what we've been seeing at rallies and in appearances. As you know, DeSantis has been running on his relationship with President Trump. He received that early endorsement in the primary, which was kind of a surprise to a lot of observers, that he defeated Adam Putnam using that relationship with Trump and that endorsement. You know, and he touts some of the same policy talking points that the president does. Remember that ad that we've seen with him telling his kid, you know, build the wall, and reading some of Trump's stuff. So a lot of the campaigning in the past few weeks has been on those Trump talking points, and I'm not Andrew Gillum.
All right. So where is he going to be tonight, by the way?
He's going to be here in Orlando. He'll be in the kind of attractions area near International Drive, near the resorts.
So what have you heard about voting in Orlando? Again, we've seen the early figures. Early voting and vote by mail has been has surpassed what we saw 4 years ago. But what about the Orlando area?
It's been very, very well, just like the rest of the state. I'm looking at the most recent numbers here from Orange County's Supervisor of Elections. And right now, with Election Day, early voting, and vote by mail, there's about a 50% voter turnout. So almost 400,000 votes cast as of about 1 o'clock today.
Now, one of the groups that politicians have really tried to win over is the Puerto Rican vote. You had thousands of Puerto Ricans from the island. They had to come to the mainland because of Hurricane Maria. A large population live there in Central Florida, in Orlando. Have we seen them represented in the voting? Have their voices been heard over the past several weeks?
Yeah, so there was a big push to get them registered, you know, after moving here. It's hard really to tell the exact number of how many Puerto Ricans are registered to vote, since there's an umbrella tick box as Hispanic. But we're hearing that there are organizations making the push. And a lot of these new Floridians from Puerto Rico are registering as no party affiliation. And something we heard throughout the campaign is the rhetoric. It was big on issues like Puerto Rican statehood. But from what we've been learning is a lot of voters are looking at more short-term policy issues. These are Puerto Rican voters. Our colleague Emily Lang visited a voting place this morning in a largely Puerto Rican neighborhood. Many are not really concerned about statehood. They're voting on the issues of affordable housing. It's hard to find a place to live, to move out from living with their families after coming to Florida after Maria.
So you think about the issues that South Floridians are thinking about right now: affordable housing, sea level rise, and a few other big ones. What about for Orlando? What are folks in Orlando thinking about most?
Well, a lot of them are kind of thinking about those same issues. The environment. I mean, there are impacts of algal blooms, red tide, and climate change here in Central Florida. Keep in mind, we cover coastal areas like Brevard and Volusia. Affordable housing is another one. Healthcare has been big for our listeners this election cycle, and also the economy. We have a tourist-based economy that relies on folks coming to the state and making this state attractive to people coming here.
And that is Brendan Byrne, again, reporter from our sister station, WMFE, and he is covering the Ron DeSantis campaign, which is going to be in Orlando for tonight. Brendan, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And again, he joined us via Skype. And we want to hear from you. Again, the number 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Let us know your story. What was it like for you today when you went voting? Maybe it's the first time that you voted ever in any election. We'd like to hear your story. Let me take a couple of calls here before we continue on. I'm going to start with Frank in Miami. Frank, thank you for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I looked at the calendar and I realized that today was my chemotherapy day. So I made it a point to get up early and vote for somebody who cares about healthcare, education, our children's future. So I voted a Gillum Nelson ticket all the way.
All right. Wow, that's amazing. You know what? You have your chemo today. You have an important appointment today, and you still made the effort to get out there and vote. Frank, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. All right. Before I go back to the phones, I want to switch things over now to our other reporter. We have Katie Switalski, our Broward reporter. She is joining us now. Katie, you there?
Hi, can you hear me, Lewis?
Yes, Katie, thanks so much. Just again, I want to mention the number is 800-743-9576. All right, Katie, what are the bigger issues right now for Broward voters? What are they talking about?
Number one is the penny transportation tax. That is something the county put a ton of money behind they really wanted to put it on signs, stickers everywhere for voters to know about it ahead of time. And that would be a 30-year sales tax increase to fund transportation projects, which you know, could include light rail down the road is part of that plan.
And you know, besides that one, too, another one is the issue with the Affordable Housing Trust Fund.
Yes. So Broward voters have the chance in their county charter amendments on that section of their ballot to vote yes or no on an Affordable Housing Trust Fund. And so the big difference for this would be it would make a trust fund for the county to use only for affordable housing projects and programs, because right now they're tapping into the state Affordable Housing Trust Fund, which does get rated each year. So this would be a much more localized Broward County version that could end up on the county's charter.
You're heading to the polls this afternoon. Where are you going to be?
Right now I'm in Parkland. I just got here to meet some hopeful young voters on their way out of school. And then this afternoon I'm also going to be visiting polls in Coral Springs and Fort Lauderdale.
And you're, by the way, you're covering the Democratic nominee for agricultural commissioner.
Yes, Nikki Freed. Her watch party tonight is in downtown Fort Lauderdale. It's at Good Spirits on North Federal Highway. And she is facing off against Republican Matt Caldwell for Commissioner of Agriculture.
What's the significance of that position? I mean, so much is put obviously on the governor's race, the Senate race, congressional races, but that's an important position.
Yeah, it is really, because most people think of commissioners of agriculture as dealing with, you know, orange crops in the state. And that's really not the way it is anymore. It's a cabinet position under the governor. And they hold a lot of power when it comes to regulating consumer services like gas pumps, auto repairs, pawn shops, roller coasters. And then they also are responsible for all concealed weapon licenses.
All right. And again, just remind everybody where you're going to be later on today.
Later on today, I will bounce from Parkland to Fort Lauderdale for Nikki Freed's election watch party.
All right. Katie Switalski, again, our Broward reporter, joining us. Thanks so much, Katie.
Thanks, Liz.
And again, we want to hear from you, your thoughts. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Just a reminder that later on tonight, starting at 7 o'clock, we have special programming here on WLRN. And host Tom Hudson is going to be, taking over the helm there, with that special coverage. We're going to bring you updated information as the polls close and all those votes are counted and coming in, and we're going to tell you the winners. All of that tonight. Also, follow us on WLRN.org and keep up with everything that has to do with the election tonight. Well, our producer, Chris Remington, voted in downtown Miami today. He waited for over an hour in line to vote, and he spoke with some of the folks who recently voted, including Miami resident Barbara Martinez. She says the circuit court judges were the most important issue on the ballot for her.
I've worked in the circuit system for over 17 years now, so I know which ones can help the growth and which ones can't.
On the WLRN Facebook page, we heard from Ivacel Josefina, who voted early at the Miami-Dade College North campus. She says people were still voting at the poll at Miami-Dade College North until almost 9 p.m. after the line was closed at 7 p.m. closing time. Long lines reported all day at the North Dade Library as well. Now, the experience was a little different for Diana Cargill, who wrote on her Facebook page, "I voted today at my polling place in Miramar, Florida. I was in and out in less than 10 minutes. I did come prepared with my selection, so that helped me move through the process quickly. I was happy to see there was a decent turnout of voters there as well. Definitely more voters than I saw at the last midterm elections." And also, by the way, if you are still going, and some of these races and some of these amendments and some of these issues that are going to be on your ballot, it is going to be a long ballot, and maybe you're not sure of some of those things, hey, we've got some of that covered for you. If you've got some time, find our podcast, Vote Already, on iTunes. It's broken up into numerous small, short episodes, and we cover a lot of different issues and amendments. Also, you can go to amendments.wlrn.org, and we have everything there for you so that you can go through it and make sure that you are prepared, because maybe you didn't follow all of the things that are going to be on that ballot, and that's okay. Let me take one more call here real quickly. I want to go to Andrew, who's been waiting in Fort Lauderdale. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hi, yes. Just an observation. I find that gun control is not the issue that I thought it was going to be. I mean, we suffered this horrible massacre in Parkland not very long ago, but it doesn't seem like you know, the voters are thinking about that issue. And I'm wondering if Gillum, if he does win, which I hope he does, what could possibly happen with gun control in the next legislature. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Andrew. I know that, you know, when I spoke with Lieutenant Governor candidates Jeanette Nunez and Chris King, we did bring up the issue. And, you know, we have tried to ask that question of a lot of different folks. Will it come back up in the next legislative session? And of course, we've heard from both Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis, their takes on the issues of gun control and gun laws in the state of Florida. All of that, of course, is on our website. But yes, it's going to see. We'll have to wait and see what happens after the smoke is cleared and we know who the winners are. We'll see just how they decide to approach this after the election's over. Again, all of your coverage updated information for this election, you're going to find at WLRN.org. And again, special programming starts tonight at 7 o'clock on WLRN. Coming up later in the program, we're going to talk with an author who was raised here in South Florida, recently won the MacArthur Fellowship. Speaking of authors, at the end of today's program, we're going to announce the November title for the Sundial Book Club. So stick around for that. Find our Facebook group, by the way, Sundial Book Club, and ask to join. Still to come, what has changed for women trying to break through the corporate glass ceiling? We're going to meet a millennial woman who's trying to help others figure that out. That's next on Sundial. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, South Florida has consistently ranked as one of the top regions in the country for entrepreneurship. But how well are women represented in those businesses? According to the State of Women-Owned Business Report commissioned by American Express, women started more than 1,800 businesses a day between 2017 and 2018. And in the past 20 years, the number of women-owned businesses has grown by 114%. But a large gender pay gap still remains for women working similar professions to men, and women are still significantly lacking representation in the boardroom. The Women's Empowerment Expo in Fort Lauderdale this weekend will dive into some of those issues and provide tools and networking for women seeking to advance their professional careers. 27-year-old Alexa Carlin is the founder and CEO of the Women's Empowerment Expo. Carlin has a fascinating life story, starting her own business when she was 17 and was given a 1% chance to live at the age of 21 after suffering from a horrific infection. She's a Palm Beach County native, and she joins us from the studios of WXEL. Alexa, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have you always been an entrepreneur? I mean, where did that come from?
I have. I mean, since I can remember, I've always been so passionate about turning an idea into a reality. And I started my first real business at the age of 17 years old.
Now, wait a minute. 17. What was I doing at 17? Most of us are worried about dating and getting into college and that test that's coming up. You started your own business at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I was school shopping going into senior year of high school, and I saw this shirt that had the graphic of a peace sign, but the palm of the hand was the shape of Africa. And on the hang tag, it said their mission was to build schools in Africa to help these villages become self-sustainable. And I just really got passionate about this, and I went on their website, realized they were only selling T-shirts and handbags to fund this mission. And I had this crazy idea, hey, maybe I can design jewelry for them. And so I started like emailing any email I could possibly find. And this was before social media, before it was easier to get in touch with people. And I followed up until 4 months later, they emailed me saying that they wanted to set up a conference call. Now, I don't think they knew I was a 17-year-old in high school. But yeah, and then in basically the amount of time of a year, I took that idea and I had my own line of jewelry.
Now, I read that while you were in college at the University of Florida, you got this great internship opportunity in New York. Why was going to New York such an important part of that career trajectory for you?
I always thought that I would end up in New York City. Since I was 10 years old, the first time I landed in New York City, I fell in love with the energy. And I always thought that I was going to be working and starting my own business in the fashion industry. But then life experiences took me a different path.
And that's where you got sick.
Yes. So 21 years old, senior in college, a few months from graduation, all of a sudden I had these like flu-like symptoms, which I thought were the flu, but it ended up where a bacteria got into my bloodstream and started killing all of my organs very rapidly. And my body went into septic shock, and I was induced into a medical coma, given a 1% chance of living.
What do you remember about that time? Do you remember, I mean, during the coma, do you remember anything?
Oh, I remember everything. It was, I always say, like, that experience in the coma was more realistic than the reality I'm currently living. That's how real and close to my heart, I guess you could say, it still is. I remember being in this field of green grass, and in front of me were all these orange mountains. And I was just running with the wind, but I wasn't in a physical body. I was this being of light, but these colors were so vibrant and so alive. Like, these colors don't exist in this reality. But at the same time, even though I was experiencing this, I never thought that this was the end, or that I was like going on to a different realm or whatever you want to believe. I just was in such a serene, peaceful state of mind.
And how did that experience, how has that experience basically colored the way that you live your life now, and how you're trying to inspire others, especially other women?
Yes, definitely. So this experience, I've taken a lot of the lessons learned and actually implemented them into my career and starting my own business. And that's what I also inspire people as a public speaker. I travel around the country sharing my story. And one of the biggest things that I learned is the power of the mind. When I was trying to heal and I was out of the coma, but I still was in a danger state in the ICU, I really had to redirect my thoughts onto small term like goals that I felt were attainable, like getting a glass of water, which I couldn't have for a long period of time, or really envisioning that end goal of getting healthy. And it all came back to what I do now in my business and what I teach women is, like, we can spend energy focusing on things we don't control or focusing on things that cause us stress, anxiety, self-doubt, insecurity, or we can take all that energy and redirect it towards the things that we do have control over. And how much more can we achieve when we really understand where we're putting our energy?
I'm talking with Alexa Carlin. She's the founder and CEO of the Women Empower Expo and a touring public speaker. And she's sharing her story and message on the importance of female empowerment, specifically in the field of entrepreneurship. The Women's Empowerment Expo is in Fort Lauderdale this weekend. You're a public speaker. What's your mission? What is it you're trying to accomplish?
My mission is to give people the courage and confidence to chase after their dreams.
Now, I mean, you've had this unbelievable life experience that very few people have. That's definitely transformed you. But at the same time, I mean, you're still young. And I wondered, how do you respond to people who come to the expos, or just any other woman who comes in who's a little older, and they look at you and they say, wait a minute, what are you going to teach me?
That's a really good question. Actually, I have had the opposite experience with women who are older, because they hear my story. First, if they see me, they may be skeptical, but once I share vulnerably and authentically, and I think that's so important for women to really gain that courage to share openly. I'm not coming and saying, here, I'm an expert and here's how to start a business. I'm sharing, here's what I'm going through. Here's what I still go through. And I'm still chasing after my dreams. I'm still turning my ideas into reality by taking action. And by coming at it in that vulnerable, authentic way, it really creates such a relatable experience for any age. And I think that's what really sets WEX, the Women of Power Expo, apart from other events, is I started this because when I was speaking, especially in South Florida, I was speaking to a certain industry where everyone stayed within their own industry, or to a certain networking event or membership group, and it was definitely divided by generation. I would speak to older women or millennial women, and nobody knew each other. And it doesn't really matter what your age is. I mean, when older women or women that are farther down in their career connect and collaborate with women who are just starting out. They have new ideas, new experiences, new perspective, and the same goes vice versa. So that's what WEX is really about. It's bringing women from different backgrounds, different industries, different ages to come together for the purpose of collaboration over competition.
Now, we hear about the challenges that women face trying to get into the boardroom, but what are some of the challenges, you know, for female entrepreneurs right now?
Definitely a big challenge is getting the support and funding needed. And I think that's definitely changing, especially with events like WEX, but also all the other things and things that are being created out there. But a really big challenge is that pay gap and that funding gap. I mean, last year, women got 2% venture capital investment. And it wasn't that there was a lack of money. It was just 2%. I mean, that's crazy. And a lot of it has to do with the narrative. I mean, that's why men are welcome at our event. When the narrative begins to change, I mean, one of the biggest things that I read in the Harvard Business Review about this study was that women were being asked different questions than men. For example, men would say, how are you going to make us money? Women are going to say, how are you not going to lose us money? That's what the investors would ask women. And it's kind of this unconscious bias. And so how we can change that is, one, women understanding their worth and their value. A lot of times women ask way less than men do for maybe even a better product or service. And that's just because we're kind of raised to please others. We're raised to, we're kind of insecure in certain areas, or we may think that it needs to be better because we don't want to disappoint someone. But we need to understand that we have that value, and what you are creating is needed, and to ask for that price point that you want.
You know, a lot of the startups that we hear about here are in the tech sector. How are women represented in the tech field in South Florida from what you've seen?
Definitely, there's not enough women in the tech sector. We, with our Female Founders Pitch competition that we host at our event, we see a lot of women coming out with apps, and, you know, a lot of our attendees, or even the angel investors that are in attendance, they've never even heard of these apps being developed by women. So I think it's just, I think people are out there doing it, especially in South Florida, like creating these amazing new innovations. But it's about elevating them and getting them to that platform for more people to know what they're doing, and then figure out who could we connect you to support you along the way. But I will say that a lot of the accelerators and incubators that are started down here in South Florida, especially in Miami, are now really focused on women in tech.
I wanted to know how the Me Too movement has factored into conversations about women climbing that corporate ladder or breaking into the business world as entrepreneurs. What has it done?
So one, the Me Too movement raised awareness. And I believe awareness is the first step, right? You have to be educated on what is wrong in order to move forward to make that positive change. The second thing, it definitely has created this collective society of women understanding that they're not alone. And so they're going to be more confident speaking up because they know other women have spoken up. And I think that's huge. That's why my company is called Women Empower Expo. It's because really community fuels empowerment. When you feel supported, you feel like you really can do anything.
And you have a story about this. I thought that was really fascinating. It was a woman you met in New York, part of the Empowerment Expo you had there. And she shared her Me Too experience.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't meet her in New York, but she shared it from she came to WEX in Fort Lauderdale last year.
OK.
And no worries. And she her story started in New York. Basically, she went through a very tragic event that had to do with, you know, her Me Too story. And it affected her like it affects everyone. And it really sent her on this downward spiral, like I'm sure we've all been there before. I know I have, where you get in this rut and it's really difficult to get yourself out of it. And someone said to her last year and said, hey, do you want to go to this event with me? It's at 10 a.m. on a Saturday. And that event happened to be Women in Power Expo last year. And usually she would say no, because once you're in that, you know, state of mind, it's really hard to get out of it. But her boyfriend at the time pushed her. She went to the event. And what she saw was all these women doing amazing things. Sometimes it just takes seeing other people doing stuff to inspire you. But she heard this one speaker said in one of our workshops, what would be the book that you wish you could have read when you were going through your own journey? And that was exactly what she needed to hear, along with all of the other speakers that she saw and people that she met, that the next day she literally got off the couch, wrote her book, and now she's ready to publish it a year later. And when I met her, actually, I think a week and a half ago at my speaking gig in Delray Beach, her and her now husband came up to me and said, you don't know us, but your event changed our life.
And that is something that happened at the Women in Power Expo, and it's coming here. The Women's Empowerment Expo is coming to Fort Lauderdale this weekend. We've been talking with Alexa Carlin, founder and CEO of the Women in Power Expo. She's also a touring public speaker and a fascinating story. She's a South Florida woman. So, Alexa, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you so much.
And again, she joins us from the studios of WXEL in Palm Beach County. Well, still to come, we're going to meet a writer raised in South Florida who recently was named a MacArthur Genius Grant winner. She loves science fiction and fantasy stories. More coming up on Sundial. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, South Florida author Kelly Link loves fantasy fiction and stories about ghosts. Come on, who doesn't? And she's also trying to help other authors get published. Now she can add to her accomplishments a MacArthur Genius Award. Link, who grew up in Miami-Dade County and now lives in Northampton, Massachusetts, we won't hold that against her, won a $625,000 no-strings-attached grant for her writing. She joined us from the studios of New England Public Radio right after winning her award, and we talked to her about growing up in South Florida, her love for ghost stories, and her future plans.
The thing about Florida is it's a landscape of such abundance and such variety and of such changeableness, the changeableness of weather, the sort of way in which things grow incredibly fast, that has almost an uncanny feel to it. And that feeling of uncanniness or strangeness is useful to writers, especially if you're a writer like me and you are drawn to stories about ghosts or stories about people who are very poor at making decisions.
So a lot of the characters in your stories are in their adolescence, and you know, or they're trying to reach that young adulthood. Explain who Kelly Link was at that age and how that helped shape your characters.
Well, I write a lot of ghost stories. I write stories about adolescence. I write about characters who are going through some kind of crisis. And that last, at least, is common of writers. All writers need to write about characters who have either a choice to make or who find themselves in really disturbed circumstances. And I think that because some of my stories have a high quotient of the supernatural or the fantastic, I have to be extra careful to center those stories around realistic experience as well. And, you know, everybody has a different life story, but the one thing that everybody has in common is that we all went through adolescence. We all remember what the experience was like, how emotionally charged it was, how fraught all the choices that we had to make felt to us at the time, and how important the relationships that we had in that moment of adolescence with our family, with our friends. Those were really important. Those were key relationships.
Was that period of your life easy or difficult? Because, again, a move out of an area that you grew up in, well, it could be big, a big moment for you.
Do you know, my life as a teenager was easy in some ways and hard in others. Moving, you know, from Florida to North Carolina is a big culture shock. And, you know, I had siblings and I loved them and I also fought with them. I had good friends that I had to leave behind in Florida. And I had to go to a new school in North Carolina and sort of remake all of those relationships.
You brought an excerpt with you from your short story, I Can See Right Through You.
So this is a story called I Can See Right Through You. It's a ghost story. And it in the main thrust of the story, I guess, it's a relationship between two actors who were in a movie together when they were very young. And the movie was very successful. And they were in a relationship for a while, and then they broke up, but they have stayed in touch ever since. And this is a story that one of the people tells the other. Maggie tells him a story. Two girls, and look, they've found a Ouija board. They make a list of questions. One girl is pretty. One girl is not really a part of this story. She's lost her favorite sweater. Two girls, each touching lightly the planchette. Is anyone here? Where did I put my blue sweater? Will anyone ever love me? Things like that. They ask their questions. The planchette drifts. They start the list over again. Is anyone here? Will I be famous? Where is my blue sweater? The planchette jerks under their fingers. M. E. Maggie says, did you do that? The other girl says she didn't. M. E. G. Maggie. It's talking to you, the other girl says. M. E. G. Maggie. Hello. Maggie says, hello. The planchette moves. There is something animal about it. H E L, hello. I am with you. I am with you always. They write it all down. M E G, Maggie, oh, I will love you always. Who is this? She says. Who are you? I-S-E-I-C-U. A pause then. I-W-I. I will, Maggie O, I will be with you always.
I'm talking with Kelly Link. She's an author who grew up in Miami-Dade County, now lives in Northampton, Massachusetts. She was recently granted the MacArthur Genius Award, a $625,000 no-string-attached grant for her writing. She's joining us from the studios of New England Public Radio. Kelly, how would you describe your style of writing for those unfamiliar with it?
I draw from some pretty old-fashioned genres, science fiction, fantasy, as we were saying, ghost stories. But I also tend to set the stories in contemporary life. The characters that I write about are people who are going through the things that we go through now. And what I will say I tried to take away from reading and loving writers like Dave Barry was, if I'm going to write, I'm going to try and make my stories funny.
For those who are unfamiliar, how do you explain the MacArthur Genius Grant?
You know, it's a very mysterious and opaque process. You don't apply for it. I don't really understand how you are nominated for it. I know that the people who work for the foundation monitor a lot of people in the arts and in the sciences and who are doing community work. And on my end, the way it happened was that about a month and a half ago, I got a phone call. And when I answered it, they asked if I was by myself, and I was not. So I went outside.
Wait a second. They
sure.
asked you if you were by
yes.
yourself? They didn't want anybody else around?
Yes, they ask you if you're by yourself. And the reason for that is during the month in between when they tell you and when they make the official announcement, you are only allowed to tell one other person. I called my husband. And it was torture, not telling my mother or my friends. I was actually working that day at my friend's house. We usually get together and all write in the same room, and I had to go back in that room where we were working and not tell anybody.
All right, Kelly, be honest. At any point, did it almost slip out?
No. Although I, you know, and I think the part of that is because it doesn't actually feel true. That it feels, you sort of think, am I dreaming? Is this some sort of weird psychological experiment? And so I didn't tell anybody. And so the moment where it actually felt real was when they began to tell the media. They tell the media sort of in the week before it happens. And so I began to get requests for interviews. And then I thought, well, I guess this is really happening.
Did they ever tell you why they chose you?
When they make the phone call, they read to you this prepared statement about yourself, which is a couple of paragraphs long. And so, and they read it to you in case, I guess, there's anything that you strongly want them to change. So I suppose that I have a general understanding of what it is that I represent. You know, I run a small press with my husband. We publish a lot of debut writers. I teach. I write a kind of story. I write short stories, which is maybe a slightly, it's not a very commercial thing to do.
What do you see, you know, this kind of grant going towards? Because as you said, you run this small independent press. Is it going to be incorporated into your future plans with the press, with the other authors you're trying to help, or with your own writing? What do you think you're going to do with it?
Well, I will say that No Strings Attached is such a wonderful thing to hear. I think at least two texts that I got from friends just said, no strings attached. And I think that's because if you're a writer, if you work in publishing at all, you spend all of your time with contracts. I'm going to have to sit on the idea that we have access to this money for a while. And I will continue working on my novel. We will pay some bills. And we will think about how to use that money in order to promote the writers that we publish.
What do you say to aspiring authors out there that want to get into, especially the niche world of fantasy writing?
I think everybody finds a different path toward creating the kind, whatever the creative work that somebody is engaged in doing. You do have to make your own path. But for me, part of that path was realizing that I like to have a community of people who are engaged in the same kind of work around me. And so 5 days a week, I go to a friend's house, a young adult writer named Cassandra Clare, and another writer, Holly Black, comes over and we all work together. I went through an MFA program and I really loved the experience of being in a workshop. You know, I have been in workshops or in some kind of writing relationship with a group of friends for most of my professional life. And it has saved me a lot of unhappiness.
You're going to keep writing any stories that take place here in South Florida, in Miami?
Absolutely. You know, I think that, you know, I don't think that I will ever live in Florida again. I think it's too hot for my husband, but I really miss it. And one way of getting to inhabit it is getting to write about it. And frankly, you know, I think that we often have the idea that the rest of the country has the idea that Florida is sort of an outlier or a place of great strangeness, and it is. But in this current moment, Florida to me feels as if environmentally and in terms of development, all of that, that it's an indicator of where we're all going to end up. And so thinking about Florida, to me, is a way of thinking about the rest of the country as well.
And that is former South Florida resident, author, and MacArthur Genius Grant winner, Kelly Link. What would I do with $600,000, no strings attached? How much time you got? Well, that is Sundial for this Election Day, Tuesday, November 6th. Well, I hope you enjoyed last month's Sundial Book Club title, Veins of the Ocean by Patricia Engel. Well, we're in November, and it's time for a new title. And for this month, we have chosen, are you ready? Drum roll. the novel, the new novel by Silas House, Southernmost. Remember, join our book club. Find the group on Facebook. Ask to join. We want everybody in. We'll have an interview with the author later this month, as well as a panel conversation with folks from around the community. You could be one of the panelists to join us and enjoy reading the November title for the Sundial Book Club. Again, Southernmost by Silas House. I'm Luis Hernandez. Have a wonderful day. Go out and vote. We'll talk to you tomorrow.